Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
DVD continues. It's D Mace's playlist today, and he said he had a dance theme.
Oh, yeah.
And he did not lie.
You just want to dance. I know Trevor over there dancing. He bobbing his head.
Yeah, he is.
He's taking us to the club today.
Exactly.
And so let's head to our 102.5 The Game hotline, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Trevor Maddich is here with us. So, Trevor, did you approve? Was that your vibe there with Derek's playlist?
Oh, no, that's a great vibe. And the thing is, when I dance, you've got to watch very closely because I don't move much. But the moves that I make are brilliant and compelling. The problem is if I do them too big, then it registers on the Richter scale and we'll get the fire department out. So I just move very, very small amounts.
Hey, listen, Trevor, ain't nothing like the two-step, man. That's all I do is two-step it through. You can do that to any song.
Well, I've learned to count to 1.5. The problem is when I get from there to 2, I guess you know what? I want to learn to do that. So I used to know how to do that.
Uh-huh.
Two-step and waltz and stuff like that. And I want to go back and learn it. And maybe if I lived in a city that had more country music, I probably would have so I got to get out there. There's no excuse.
Well, Trevor, let's start with this. A big story in the NFL is, and I think we could have predicted that this was very plausible, but Aaron Rodgers has come out and said this is going to be his last year, just a few days after he officially signed up to come back to the Steelers. So I look at their team and I see it could go a lot of different ways with how it's constructed. And of course, the division ended up being very winnable last year, and they found a way to do it at the end of the season and got to the playoffs. So now that they have a different coach, what do you see from this last year from Aaron Rodgers?
Well, it's a reunion between Rodgers and McCarthy, their new coach. So that actually has a chance to have some good synergy. And Rodgers, who knows about Rodgers? Who is this guy anyway? I mean, last we heard from him, really, he was in Brazil or someplace in an all quiet, all darkness retreat. I don't know what that is, but he seemed to make it back. I'm just glad for the Steelers that he made a decision now instead of waiting until right before training camp. I mean, it's been an ongoing drama that a few years ago was interesting, and then it got to be a little tedious. And at this point, it's really annoying. So I'm glad he's back. The thing is, though, McCarthy knows how to use him. And, you know, whether or not he's got the physical skills that he used to have, I mean, I think he's fine. He's probably still one of the best in the league. But it's his knowledge and being able to apply what McCarthy wants him to do. Because remember this, that defenses really need 12 guys to be able to cover everything. Now, they only get 11, so there's always a weak spot. And so when you've got a combination of a coach and a quarterback that knows how to find those weak spots in real time, in the moment, then you've got something going on, and that really is the Steelers' best opportunity on offense, is for Rodgers to be able to apply all of his experience even more than just his physical skill.
That is a great point, and I wondered that myself because it's been, I don't know how many years, it's been a sizable amount of time since McCarthy actually coached Aaron Rodgers. So I'm sure as he watches and gets a gauge on what version of Aaron Rodgers is he now as opposed to when he last had him for Green Bay, how that adjusts the offense. I'm curious on that process.
Right. Well, I don't think there'll be a whole lot of adjustment. I think basically Rodgers is going to tell his coach what the coach is going to do. And, you know, I that was probably part of the negotiations in terms of Rodgers coming back. Because at this point, you don't want to teach him any new tricks and you don't want to teach him any new schemes. That would be ridiculously silly. He's going straight to the Hall of Fame from here and you need to find out what he wants to do and then maximize that for him.
We'll talk
the good news is, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Trevor. Go ahead. Finish. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to say, though, that you know they've got some good young offensive linemen in the draft, and we'll see if they can kind of help protect him. But at wide receiver, they signed Michael Pittman from the Colts, and he's one of the premier deep threats in the league. And then they drafted Jeremy Bernard out of Alabama, who's a very reliable short to intermediate route runner. And then they got Rico Dowdle, the running back. So, I mean, they've given him some very good young and veteran players to work with. So I'm kind of excited to see how he's going to do. I really want him to do well because, truthfully, I want the kind of bad taste in my mouth about the last several years of his off-field stuff to be washed away by some good performance.
We'll talk with Trevor Maddich, ESPN NFL analyst, as well as college football. Now, Trevor, how do you when you're looking at these coaching staffs throughout the league, in particular, your offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, or in your head coach, how do you rank the Titans situation where they have Saleh as their head coach / defensive coordinator, then you have Brian Daboll, and then you have Brady there assisting Saleh as far as, you know, the defense. How do you rank that group amongst the other head coaches and offensive coordinator combinations around the league and defensive coordinators?
You know, Derek, I think that you have to, as a fan, look at this coaching staff matched with this roster and what they're trying to do as being a grade of A. Mm-hmm. A+, I'm not ready to give them yet, you know, but definitely an A. You know, and where they stand around the rest of the league, it all depends on how those coaches, not just how good they are, but how good they work together and how good they are able to develop the players that they've got. I mean, take a look at Chris Cignetti just on the college side. Came from James Madison to Indiana, went to the playoff his first year, and then undefeated national champions this year. He brought in a whole bunch of guys from JMU who knew the culture, knew the schemes, and they'd be able to get the program running fast from the very beginning because they could coach from inside the locker room. The Titans are doing kind of the same thing. Robert Saleh, I think, is a great head coach for this team in this moment because, you know, when Vrabel left, everybody thought that that was kind of a crazy decision. And then they brought in Brian Cunningham, who I think just it wasn't time in his coaching career to be able to take on a challenge like the Titans. And it was more like the Titans, you know, locker room was not as controlled as it should have been. And Robert Saleh is an adult in the room. He is an alpha among alphas. And that's what this team needs in this moment. And then when you look at the kind of players that they're bringing in from free agent, they're doing what Indiana did on the college side. They're bringing in a whole lot of players, especially on defense, that understand the culture that Saleh wants to build. They understand the schemes. So they'll be able to be coaches in the locker room. And they can hit the ground running, which is what this team needs to do. I think that Gus Bradley works well with Robert Saleh. They've got history together. I like the scheme that they've got because it's a very aggressive defensive scheme that sends the defensive line flying with their hair on fire on, you know, upfield to penetrate and create wreckage behind the line, and then the linebackers clean up behind it. And I like what they've built on paper now to move towards that kind of scheme. And then Brian Daboll, I think, is the perfect offensive coordinator for Cam Ward right now because his scheme is much more simple for a young quarterback to be able to digest and then implement because it is basically patterns. I mean, they can say two or three words, sometimes even one word, and the quarterback will know where the receivers are all going to be, no matter how they got to where they were just before the snap, because there are a lot of formation shifts, a lot of motions, a lot of eye candy for the defense, which makes the defense think a lot, but it doesn't make the quarterback think too much. So it's simple for Cam Ward, complicated for the defense, and Daboll has had success with his system in various stops that he's had around the league, and I think it's just – when you look at this coaching staff, Derek, mm-hmm. and just apply it to the applicability to this team and its needs today, I couldn't say that you could do better.
Now, speaking of Daboll and how it's going to be critical for he and Cam to sort of build that relationship and whatnot, how do you think they're thinking about this, you know, forward thinking like next year? And I know we're not there yet, but they have to be thinking, hey, listen, if this thing goes right, our young quarterback will then have another offensive coordinator that he has to learn from. How do you think they're going to go about that during the season, knowing that that can be a possibility?
Yeah, that's a bad thing. And I think it's a good possibility just because the conversation around Brian Daboll is that he'll go off and be a head coach again sooner rather than later. But that's the price you pay when you've got a really good assistant. People are going to want to poach him from you, and that's fine. I would believe that Robert Saleh would bring in, either from in-house or from somewhere else, someone who understands this style of offense so that the terminology and the principles can stay the same. Because you're totally right that if you've got a rookie quarterback last year who tried to learn a system, about the time he got good at it late in the season, now they're teaching him a new system. And if they do that again in the third year, keep in mind that in the fourth year, they've got to decide if they want to pick up his fifth-year option. And if you keep giving him new systems to go with new coordinators, you're not putting him in a position to show you how good he can actually be. And it's up to really Robert Saleh and the front office to make sure that if Daboll does leave, that whoever they bring in will be able to maintain continuity, because coaches come and go. We've seen that with the Titans. But franchise yeah. quarterbacks, you had better do right by them.
Now, the big news here in Nashville, as you know, Trevor, is the city has been awarded a Super Bowl in 2030. What are your thoughts on that? And do you think the city, because I think that's everybody's question, will the city be prepared and ready to host a Super Bowl? What are your thoughts on that?
I think the city's prepared and ready now. I mean, you'll need to have, you know, the hotels and lodging and things like that farther out from Nashville be included in the process. You know, it's not like the French Quarter in New Orleans where everybody all, you know, you get 250,000 people piling into the quarter, and then the week later they all leave and it's like they were never there. You know, it's going to be a little different in Nashville. But the reason I love this is because the city of Nashville, the people of Nashville, are top-tier sports fans and top-tier music fans. They know how to be a fan. They know what to look for and how to support. And I'll tell you, the most Nashville thing I've ever seen happened to my wife and I a few years ago when the Predators made that great playoff run. We were at the Ryman watching Vince Gill, and the Predators were in a playoff game, I believe, right across, or a couple blocks away at Bridgestone Arena. So Vince Gill is wearing a Predators jersey. He's got a TV monitor that he was looking at, and between songs, he kept us up to date in the audience as to what was going on at Bridgestone Arena. And then all of a sudden, who walks out on the stage but Reba McEntire? She was at the Predators game. So she came two blocks from Bridgestone Arena to the Ryman, sang a couple songs with Vince Gill, and then she went back to the Predators game. Right? That is the most Nashville thing I've ever seen, right? And so I think that the city of Nashville is going to shine with the Super Bowl, just like the city of Nashville shined in the draft a couple of years ago.
That is great. Trevor Maddox is with us from ESPN. So, Trevor, let's switch to the college ranks here. We got your strong opinion last week when the Brendan Sorsby story started to come out, and now more has come out, and now we know his defense. He has issued the statement, the affidavit. This is the case for his attorney. He's trying to get the injunction, of course, which has worked for some athletes. In other words, you don't necessarily win the case. You just delay it, and in the meantime, maybe he gets to play. But I just want to read this part of his argument and get your opinion on it. Mr. Sorsby plays small bets, typically between $5 and $50, in support of Indiana. This is when he played for Indiana. He was a scout team guy at that point in his career. Of course, he's gone to Cincinnati since then. He played a lot there, and of course, he was a very highly sought after guy in the portal. He is supposed to play for Texas Tech, but now we have this. In other words, he placed bets on Indiana back then to win or score more than a certain amount of points, for the quarterback to throw more than a certain amount of touchdowns or yards. He rationalized these bets as a way to feel more connected to the team, rooting for his friends, and feeling like he had a real stake in games despite being otherwise uninvolved. So I think I already know how you feel, but I'm going to throw you the red meat and let you get a hold of that.
Yeah, the red that quote came from his lawyers, right?
Yes.
I mean, maybe they told him that, but somebody that works for him as a lawyer said, yes, that will be compelling for the judge. Any judge who buys that ought to be judging Pinewood Derby contests and nothing bigger. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard, and he should have said nothing at all rather than say, yeah, well, I gambled, and it was to make my connection with my teammates better, so let me play now. Right? It's ridiculous. The thing is, though, it's not necessarily as cut and dried that he won't play as it may seem. And the reason is that he's basically wrapping himself in the cloak of mental illness. He's saying that he had a problem, that the disqualifying gambling, which is where he bet on his own team, happened in 2022 when he was redshirting at Indiana, and he never bet on his team to lose. And he recognized that he had a problem. This was years ago. He checked into rehab, and he will come out a better person. And it was a long time ago that I mentioned that, and that is what he will hang his hat on. And there's federal law protecting people with disabilities like legitimate mental illness. So it's not something just to be discarded. But the problem that he has, I think, is that the NCAA has a hard red line saying that if you gamble, we can suspend you for a certain amount of games. But if you gamble on your own team, you're out. You're done. And that is what he has to overcome. And the only way I can see that he can overcome it is by wrapping himself with the cloak of the mental illness thing, which might be fully legitimate. I'm not sure. But what he really wants with this lawsuit is for the court to force the NCAA to make a quick decision. Either they'll let him play, or they'll suspend him, then let him play, or they'll suspend him for the season and he can't play and he has to deal with the supplemental draft. Either way, he wants to know what's happening right now, ASAP, without the NCAA taking a year to figure it out. And then that's what the lawsuit seems to be about.
Yeah, I understand that part. Here's another statement, and Trevor, I think you and I are going to agree on why this is wrong as well. The NCAA will suffer no harm from letting Mr. Sorsby play football while this case proceeds. But if the court does not act, no future judgment can give Mr. Sorsby back what the NCAA will have taken from him. That goes with the timeline that you were saying, that, you know, if they just wait it out, then the whole season's going to go by and we won't know what the decision is. But doesn't the NCAA, if they open the door and say, yeah, you know, he has a problem, so it's mental illness, like, they can't open that precedent, right? It's got to be a hard line. If you gamble, you cannot play, right?
Right. If you accept that paradigm that you said, that it would be irreparable harm to Sorsby if they don't let him play, and therefore they should hurry up. The thing is, the NCAA is harmed irreparably if they do let him play, in my opinion.
Yes.
And it's because if you're able to say, yeah, I gambled on my own team, but look, I have a mental illness, and look, here's the federal law about that, and I checked into rehab, and you let Brendan Sorsby come back after a short suspension, maybe, you now have to let me come back because of that precedent. If they open the door with Sorsby, then the red line no longer exists. And so that's where I disagree with the statement from Sorsby's camp. If they allow him to come in even after missing half a year or something like that, they have obliterated what used to be a red line when it comes to gambling on your own team. And Sorsby, in his pleadings, has admitted that he gambled on Indiana when he played there.
Yeah, and there's no way he's going to be the last kid that has this come up, right? With all the gambling that goes on, we know there will be scores of other people in the future years that come and have this problem. And so you cannot let every kid say, well, he's got a gambling addiction. That's okay. Just come back and you can play. There's no way you can do that. It opens up too many problems. Trevor, we're out of time, but thank you very much for coming on. Thanks for adjusting the time with the SEC tournament going on here. We'll talk to you again next week.
Always great to talk with you. Thanks, guys.
All right. Trevor Maddich, ESPN football analyst, could do college, could do pro. Always awesome to talk football with. When we come back, we'll take some of your questions. 615-737-1025. We're going to go a little deeper into this Brendan Sorsby thing. We want to know your opinion. Is this as open and shut as I think it is, as Trevor thinks it is? I think D-Mace agrees as well. Do you have sympathy? What do? You cannot open up this door and let him play at all this year, can you? 615-737-1025. Tell us what you think. Call or text. DVD continues in just a moment.